Marina, actually, the reason why I chose this topic for this month of Sivan is because we've received the Torah on Shavuos, and the Chiddush Yarim was asked the question, why is it that we have a name for a Shabbos before Pesach, Shabbos HaGadol, we have a name for a Shabbos before Rosh Hashanah and Sukkot, Shabbos Shuva, well, it's before Sukkot. He was asked, what about the Shabbos before Shavuos? And he said, the Shabbos before Shavuos is called Shabbos Derech Eretz. Because Derech Eretz, Kodma Torah, Derech Eretz comes before Torah. So before we are cover the Torah, we should be engaged and learn about Derech Eretz. And there is a minhag brought down in the Sefer Luach Dovah Be'ito, which reproduces the Masechta Derech Eretz Zuto, one of the small minor Masechtas, that one should learn about Derech Eretz before Shavuos. Because Derech Eretz comes before Torah. This originates from Bereishis Per Gimel, Chastalad, Lishmaris, Derech Eitz Hachayim, Zu Derech Eretz, Eitz Chayim, Zu Torah, Shatola, Nitno, Elo, Le'achav, Tach, Mavdoros. The Torah was only given 26 generations later, after the idea of Derech Eretz, Me'odon, Vav Moshe, and this is brought to tomorrow, Shabbat, Peches, and the Bereishis Rabbah, and Perek Alam, and other places as well. That doesn't mean to say that Derech Eretz overrides Torah, but if you feel that it's manners to kiss every woman you meet, then that is not called Derech Eretz Kodma LaTorah. That is erroneous. But the importance of Derech Eretz we will bring out in a number of examples. We did once have a share about table manners a long time ago, and so I'm not going to deal much with that. But if you look at Orach Chaim Siman Kuf Ayin, it deals with it, the way you behave at the table, like not slurping your drink all in one go and things like that. But we are going to concentrate more on practical everyday issues, which is why I call it modern manners.
Oh, thank you.
So you might say, well, it's common sense which dictates most manners, although it didn't happen so long ago that I was in a shul and there was one visitor there, and every so often his mobile phone would go ding. Perhaps not as bad as when my wife's WhatsApp goes doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo. But you know, common sense dictates, you know, this is not the way to behave in shul. In fact, Harvard Shul have brought out an edict that if your phone does go off during the davening, you are subject to a £30 fine. A ticket is issued by the governor, and this is with the agreement of all the members. And maybe we're going in the right direction. I was visiting a shul not long ago in New Jersey, Sardi Shul, and there was a big sign saying that no mobile phones may be brought into shul. Never mind switching them off or putting them on silent. You're not allowed to bring them in, and the shul provides lockers for your phones in the foyer outside, which have chargers inside them so that you can charge up your phone while you're dominating. But yeah, a lot of things are just common sense, like the guy who's blowing his nose so profusely in shul that it really puts you off your dominating. I mean, you can hear the noise. People should have common sense, and that is their heritage. But sometimes there may be questions about, when you're in doubt, whether certain good manners apply or don't apply. What about when one person wants to have the window open and another person wants to have it closed? So this is what I put under the category of modern manners. Or another shaila which comes up about, what about in your business dealings with other people, and you feel obliged to shake the hands of a woman, and you might embarrass her if you don't, what are the halachas on this? So these are questions which come up under the aspect of what I call modern manners. And unfortunately, without disrespect to yeshiva life, somehow some brachim seem to diminish in their manners when they're in yeshiva. Because I remember in one of the yeshivas I went to, I better not say which one, you know, in the dining tables, when you'd like some seconds and there's nothing left on your table, so you go up to the next table and you say, excuse me please, I hope you don't mind me asking, but is that mashed potato spare? Yes, by all means, go and take it. And then a few weeks later, when one is in the yeshiva, one goes up to the table and say, do you want that mashed potato? And then a few weeks later, you go up to them and you go, spare? Or then you're occupying the bathroom for three quarters of an hour on a Friday afternoon, and other people are waiting to get in. I mean, that is not the right way to behave. Or when there's a large bowl of soup and everybody's doing self-service, you don't take the ladle and get out of it all the liquid in order to keep so much solid, so that people are at the end of the queue won't get any of the solid left and it'll just be liquid. These are bad manners, obviously. And the Sefer Elam HaKarot in the second Chelek, Rav David Salman talks about a nickname he gives to somebody called Shammai, not the real, a real person, who is so medactic in his mitzvahs, he's so particular that what he's doing is Lashem Shammayim, and he'll be worried about Yad VaYava, and he will be so medactic in all the parasim of a mitzvah, and when he's putting on his talus with such fervor, he swings it in such a way that the stitches fly in the eyes of somebody else and hurts them. And once it happens that the stitches knock against somebody's eyeglasses and they fall to the ground and they break, and when the person complains to the fellow who's been swinging his talus, he says, "What can I do? It's hard to be a Jew." That's not the right derech to behave. One's got to have constant consideration for others. My wife and I were in a certain very Haredi settlement in Israel in the supermarket, where a clearly dressed Haredi man was pushing my wife in the queue. It's unbelievable. Or there was the person who blocked my car in the car park, and I patiently waited for him, and when he came out he said, "I was staying later because I stayed for the Mishnayos here." Yeah, very nice. Have the chumrah, keep extra din in, but don't do it at the expense of somebody else. But let's look at some principles before we look at more practical examples. The Sifron Kadoshim, Perek Dalad, Yud Beis, says, Rabbi Akiva Omer, v'atarech v'kamocha zeh klal gadol b'atara. We all know Rabbi Akiva says that you have to love your neighbor like yourself. Zeh klal gadol b'atara. This is a very great principle of the Torah. But Ben Azai comes along and says something which seems to contradict Rabbi Akiva. He says his pasuk is Zeh Toldos Ha'odom from Bereishis, B'tzalem Elokim Bara Oso, that a person was created in the image of God, and for him that pasuk is more important than Rasa Re'acha Kamocha. That people are created in the image of God, so you have to have this reverence for other people. But that is a more powerful pasuk. Zek Lot Godom Mizet. This is a greater principle, he says. Why? Because you might think on the Rasa Re'acha Kamocha, oh well, this person was rude to me, therefore I can be rude to him back. Because Rasa Re'acha Kamocha means I behave to him like he behaves to me. So you might think it doesn't really matter then if I'm rude. So Rabbi Yochanan of Mir said, just because other people speak to you badly, that doesn't give you a license under Rasa Re'acha Kamocha to do the same. But the reason why Ben Azai wants to stress the posuk of B'Tselem Elokim Bara Oso is because you might have the Havamin of the assumption that there are certain instances when you're allowed to be rude and when you're allowed to dispense with manners. And so Yosef brings out from a number of sources, he's so hamaskim with Bein Odom L'Chaveru, the whole purpose and foundation of behaving nicely to other people, not only is Derech Eretz Kodma L'Torah, but Zeh She'omrah Shnei Keruvim Posek Kanafayim L'Malot. We know about the Keruvim and the Mishkan who face each other, Ufneihem Ish Elochiv. Their face is one person to the other person. Lirnos Al Shnei Yesodos Eile, to give a hint, to drop the hint that there are these two principles of both Derech Eretz Kodma L'Torah and the way a person is behaving to the other way from the principle of the Keruvim. So the Tzelem Elokim also applies to Gentiles, not just to Jewish people, and that the manners apply equally to Gentiles as well as to Jews. And then the Tziv writes at the very beginning of Parshas Bereishis in his Hakdamah, he says there are some who call Sefer Bereishis Sefer HaYoshor. Yoshor means straight, being really upright. And he says the way that others treated the Gentiles is the lessons that we learn from Sefer Bereishis. How they dealt with idolaters, And we know how Yaakov Avinu dealt with Lavan, who was an idolater. He dealt with him honestly, even after he was cheated, and he was given the wrong color under the chuppah, and he was cheated profusely. Nevertheless, he still carried on dealing honestly with Lavan. Why? Because Lavan was Tzelem Elohim. So he had the respect for him. And there's an interesting story about the Panovich Arov, who was famous for building the great Panovich Yeshiva in Bnei Barak. And he came to Bnei Barak straight after the war, and he said, the first thing we're going to build is not a yeshiva. The first thing we're going to build is an old age home. Because that way, our youth will learn respect for those who are needy, and they will learn derech eretz. So the Maharal writes in the Sivas Olam, if you really love Hashem, then you love His children. And Avas Hashem, part of Avas Hashem, is loving your fellow man, fellow woman. So Rav Shai Shechter brings down from the Drasha of Ran that a question about when you've got a choice of a shidduch. Let's say you've got a daughter, an only daughter, and for some reason there are only two different boys to choose from for this daughter. One of them is a very kind person who's a real gentleman, who's full of manners, very modest, very humble, but he's an agnostic. You know, his emunah is a bit on the borderline. And then you've got another boy who you're looking at, who keeps all his mitzvahs, apparently properly, but he's arrogant and he's rude. So which one would you marry off your daughter to? Now you'll give me the obvious answer, you'll say, well, I won't marry them off to, I won't marry her off to either of them, because she's going to stay single. But assuming that there are really no other guys in the world, and she obviously wants to get married, do you marry your daughter off to the guy who is kind but agnostic or atheist? Or do you marry your daughter to the one who is believing in Hashem, who's got his emunah but is downright rude? Well, before you give me your answers, let's just have a look at the Drasha Saran. When Moshe Rabbeinu was writing out the Torah at Hashem's dictate, he was doing it religiously, until it came to the pasuk Vayom Elokim Nasa Adam B'Tzalmenu. So Hashem said, write down the words Nasa Adam, we will make man. Moshe Rabbeinu stopped and said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, how can I write this? We will make man? You're giving a taina to the Abikosin. Marta Nosin Tischem Pelaminim. You're giving them a taina. And in fact, the Christians use this, you know, we, and they use that as one of their bits of so-called evidence. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to him, Omale, Kisov, write it down. That's their problem. If they want to believe differently, but I want you to write Nasa Odom. Ha'odom Hazeh Shebarasi, I created this man, I would like to use this phrase. So the Ram says, you know, isn't it derech eretz to listen to those who are underneath? This is what the Perushim say. Hashem is saying, the Malochim, the angels, I'm consulting and I'm talking with him. Let's make man. We are in this together. I'm consulting you, although you are below me, just like the managing director in an office would like to bring in some change and restructuring to the office, he will nevertheless consult the workers. Now, he might have it in his mind what will happen at the end, and he'll set up committees, but for him, he realizes that in order to have good relationships, and the right thing to do is to consult others. So, that is in the same way. I expect, Hashem says, I expect humans to do the same like what I'm doing. Let's consult! Let's do this together, even though I have made a decision already. Let's see what you've got to say. Nasa Adam, and it's a demonstration of humility, of anova. So, the answer of Sabotka says, yeah, that's all very nice, but what's the answer to this question about the shidduch? You know, we've still got, well, the atheist, and he says, see for me, it's more important to have derech eretz. Initially, then to believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is an amazing chiddush. And the Chofetz Chaim says, this is where we learn Derech Eretz Kodma L'Torah. So the Ron explains, in his Droshes, he says there are two kinds of mitzvahs, really. There's one which is a roshem on both the guf and the nefesh, which has an effect both on the soul and also on the physical well-being of a person. For example, hating others. It's harming your neshama and it's harming your guf. But the another kind is simply the nefesh, the relationship which you have between man and God. That is something which has nothing to do with other people. And that is the other category. And there, you're not so likely to transmit the wrong way to other people, because that's a private matter between you and God. So when the Ovos sought a spouse for their children, they did not want their children to marry from Canaan. Ah, you can say, why was Besuel an acceptable candidate for his daughter to marry one of the Ovos? He was an idolater. Lavan was an idolater. Alright, you could say they were related, but, you know, if you're looking for a shir for your daughter, what was it that the Ovos thought? They wanted to avoid Canaan, because Canaan doesn't change their bad character traits. That's what the Mefarshim say. And that having the good traits is essential. And therefore what comes out from the Drosh of Haran is that when you've got that choice of a shidduch between somebody who is a gentleman and good-mannered, that person is more likely to come to Avat Hashem and Yirat Hashem. Whereas the person who's arrogant and rude is more likely to go off the derech. And therefore the choice of the shidduch is the first one and not the second one. An amazing chiddush. And somebody once came to the Kotzke Rebbe and proudly said, I learnt Shas. So he said to the person, yes, but what did Shas teach you? And the Sinas Yisharim has a parish by Rabbi Tversky called Lights Along the Way. And he there quotes the Gemara Baba Kama Daf Nun about the fellow who clears his land by throwing the stones over this fence onto the public highway. And he gets rebuked for it. He says, why are you injuring yourself? He doesn't say, why are you injuring others who will fall over the stones? Why are you injuring yourself? And sometime later, this fellow, who's puzzled by the remark, goes broke, bankrupt, sells his field, and he's walking along the road, and he falls over the very stones which he threw there, and he's injured himself. And from here, says Rapperski, he says, you see, you don't throw your rubbish out of your car window. So that's the modern manners which comes out of it. Thank you. Say that louder.
People in glass houses.
Apart from the fact that you can be fined for throwing your rubbish out the window, it's not their case. It's not the way of the Torah. Yes, sorry?
Going back to the shidduch of his daughter, what about the derech of asking her what she wants?
Sorry? Asking her what she wants. Well, we're assuming she leaves it up to her parents to decide. Okay, we could spend an hour just on that question, I suppose. And sometimes there are some people who really get in your way and up your nose, and you feel like saying something rude to them. I think the typical example of that is the photographer at the weddings. You know, they're dominating the scene. They're telling everybody what to do, do this, do that. And you feel as though the atmosphere would be so much nicer if these photographers would just be a bit more subtle in their ways. But it once happened with Rav Moshe Feinstein, who was standing under the chuppah, and the photographer went up to him and told him, in a rather rude way, could you please turn the other way? And Rav Moshe immediately did as the photographer said, and somebody asked him, you know, who does he think he is telling you what to do? And he said, you have to respect the photographer. That is his livelihood. That's his parnasa. And we give him cooperation whenever we can. Well, that was his answer. Now, when we talk about derech eretz, you often think about eating. I mean, that's the best part of our physical routine, isn't it? And there are kiddushin, when you eat out at other people, when you eat in your own house. There can be various questions that arise, and we can deal with maybe some of them. I always wondered, why is it when you come to a kiddush and there's only a small number of seats, why is it it's always the children who are sitting around the table, and the grown-ups and elderly are the ones having to stand? Kshalei halacha is, is it all right to eat when you are standing? Is it derech eretz? Because the Shulchan Aruch does say in Siman Kuf Ayin Sifchot, Lo Yochal Me'uma, the person generally should not eat when they are standing up. But the Piskei Tshuvos does write on page Tov Pei Tes, he says, Eilu Olam Nizhorim Bazeh. It's the Minhag Olam not to be so particular. You know, you had a Kiddush. It's not practical for everybody to sit down. Although it's interesting, he says, the Rambam omitted this aspect in his Hilchos Seyas. about that you should not be standing. Certainly, when you're making kiddush, you should sit down when you're drinking the wine. So says the Magen Avraham, and so says the Mishnah Berurah. So, notwithstanding whether it's a health issue, there are those who say one should try, especially for eating a whole plate of fish and salad and so on, and it could look pretty messy. It might be more dignified if you sit down. What about this halacha when you're eating out at somebody else's house? Kol ma she'omer lecha bal habayis aseh. Anything which the bal habayis says to you, you should do. So have respect for your host, you shall do what you're told. Now how far does that extend? Well, the halacha says, chutz mitzvah, unless he tells you to get out. Once the Chametz Chaim was asked to sit on the top table, and he refused. So somebody said to him, everything the Baal HaBayis tells you to do, you should do. He says, yes, but it says chutz mitzvah. He's set to go out. And there are certain things which can drive a person out from the world. Akina v'ataiva v'akavod motzias adam min ha'olam. So it's going to give me gaiva and big-headedness if I sit at the top table, and so that will be motzias adam min ha'olam, so I don't have to accept it. So said the Chametz Chaim. What in practice if the host says to you, come on, you've got to have more, you've got to eat seconds. Or what if you just can't, you've had enough, and he serves very big portions. There, halacha says, you don't have to listen, you just politely say, thank you very much, I've had enough. But generally, we should be doing what the Baal HaBayis asks you what to do.
They're doing it for politeness as well.
Politeness,
they're offering it to you, out of politeness, don't feel embarrassed not to have more. You're quite in your right to decline.
Well, once I went to a place where I was invited with my wife to a distant relation who was serving, they were so busy in the kitchen making this, making that, and we were the only guests, and I just did not want to eat chicken soup because I just don't fancy it, and they came out and served it, and to my wife's utter surprise I started eating it because I felt like, you know, they were working so hard in the kitchen, we could see how busy they were, and I felt like the sort of people they were would be offended if I wouldn't, so I had it. Look, it's kosher. But I'm talking about kashrus. What if you don't like the heksha that people are using? Is it appropriate in the terminology of modern manners to decline the food? What's the question? And that this question is asked in Paskin. Now there are two kinds of parishas, chumras. One can be when it's protect yourself from an isur, where you might say I'm machme because I'm worried about coming to eat something which might be treif. And then there's another kind of parishas where you're not likely to do an issa, but just as a personal aspect of refinement, you've got your own personal chumrah, like you might only want to eat your own shechita, but you do believe that other people's shechita are kosher. So that is where the difference lies.
I know somebody who asked a shayla about it, because his parents are not so mucked about hechsherim when it comes to Pesach.
Yes.
And he knew that if he would start being particular, he would upset his parents, so he was told you have to eat what they offer you, as long as it's not treif or anything like that.
Yeah.
Even if it's the heksha you wouldn't personally choose, he was told, the Aser Shailen was told, go
right.
ahead
and eat. Well, this is what he writes in the fifth day. Teshuvah, you don't bring up your chumras and as a result embarrass other people. The Ramah writes about pas akum, that there is a chumra not to eat bread baked by non-Jewish people, but me'ikadin, you're allowed to eat pas akum. It's not the same as bishul akum. Ravita, for example, is pas akum. It's perfectly right to eat it. It's got the LBB on it. But some people have the chumrah. So there are more rights that when it comes to eating pas akum at somebody else's table, you eat it. You're not going to offend them.
Surely that's on the basis that there isn't anything else available.
Well,
generally about bread.
Well, it is true that bread is singled out. The Shach writes that when it comes to chemas akum, butter, which is made by non-Jews, well, butter is obviously made from kosher milk because you can't make it from non-kosher milk. But there may be a worry that something's getting mixed into it. So the Shach says if you're served butter made by an akum, you don't have to eat it. And he says, but bread is different, because bread is the substance of the meal. And so there's more ill-feeling likely as a result of declining to eat the bread than to eat the butter.
Is that then dependent on the situation?
Pardon?
Is that then dependent on the situation, like your example of the chicken soup? It's not specific to the item, it's specific to the...
Oh, with chicken soup, if they have a hasher, which is...
No, I mean...
Which is kadassia, and you'll only eat London based in, then you'll eat it.
I mean, is it dependent on the situation, so how you feel your...
No, but I said it that way round. Pardon?
Is it dependent on not the food, but how your guest would take it if you designed that?
Certainly, you have to know each other, and if you're very close friends and you can talk openly to each other, things are readily understood. And certainly the best way is if you're invited and you're in advance of the meal, it's best to say to them, listen, I'm a vegetarian, do you mind if I decline from blah blah blah? That's the way people normally do it. But you don't want to sound extra holy if you say, listen, I don't eat this hetcher and I don't eat that hetcher. If it really bothers you, then don't go there at all. But certainly, if it's a recognised hetcher, then you have no excuse. You have to eat it when you're at somebody else's table. Otherwise, you're causing them embarrassment, and causing embarrassment is an issa d'oraisa. There is the question of shmita. If you rely on the hetam akira, if your hosts rely on the hetam akira and you don't, so you don't want to eat their vegetables. I was once invited to a place like that, and I said to him in advance of the meal, I said, listen, I'll be happy to, it was a time when the vegetables were dodgy, so I said, look, don't be offended, I prefer to not to rely on the hetam akira. I'll eat your fish and I'll eat your meat and I'll eat your bread, but do you mind if I just leave the vegetables? So he perfectly understood, and the way I did it, he wasn't offended.
So I don't sidetrack you, but the lamb bacon in Germany given an extra to Hovius bread, I believe.
Hovius, right.
So, I mean, is it the case you should only have that if there's no alternative?
Well, it's the same. Akum is a chumrah.
Yeah, right.
So it's for you to decide whether you want to take on that chumrah. Right. But you are allowed to eat Hovius if it's got the extra of the lamb and bacon.
Right.
Yeah.
So these are the problems when you're eating out. What about simply when you're eating at home?
Yeah.
There are certain manners which can be important in the modern sense when you're just alone at home. And my favourite example of this is once I heard Rav Pesach Krohn speaking, and he said that when you're sitting at your table and the wife serves the soup, he said, don't start your soup until your wife is sitting down. He said, she's not your maid, have some respect for her. But if you've gulped down your soup while she's still serving other guests, and by the time she sits down you've finished yours, he says that's downright rude. And that's not the way to behave towards one's wife. Alright, if your wife says to you, darling, don't wait for me, your soup will get cold, okay, you've got a heter from your wife to have your soup. Once I was sitting at my table, and my Rosh Hashiva was with us on a short visit to London, Rav Meir Schlesinger, and he was sitting at our table, and my wife said to him, after serving soup, she said to him, would you like seconds? And he said, yes please. And then she looked at me, would you like seconds? And I hesitated. And my Rosh Hashiva said to me, you have to say yes. Because I said yes, you have to, as the host. Because otherwise, I feel awkward when I'm eating. A very interesting lesson I learned from him at that time. Something which I learnt a lot from our Gentile friends, because, you know, often it seems to be the fact that you can learn good manners more from Gentiles than from Jews. When I worked in a non-Jewish office, and it was a bit stuffy in the room, one Gentile colleague would announce to everybody, would anybody mind if I open the window? Whereas when I go to a certain shtiebel, somebody throws open all the windows in the middle of the winter when you're freezing cold, without asking anybody first whether they mind it. Well,
it's probably because they can't talk during davening.
Oh, that must be the reason. They can't do it davening. But you can do it at the moment. You can always point at the window. You know. But in practice, what is the halacha if somebody wants to open the window and another person wants to have it closed? And this is discussed by a number of modern rabbonim. And there's a sefer called Mishpatei Tzara by Rav Spitz, who deals with this subject at length. And his general principle is we go according to the most sensitive people, which is usually the people who want it closed. So that if one person feels cold when the window is open, but one person wants it open because he feels stuffy, then the general principle is you keep the window closed. And this is based on Gemara in Baba Batra. There, the Chof Beis on the base, there's a story of Rav Yosef who had some date palm trees adjacent to his next door neighbor whose profession was alternative medicine, and he did bloodletting. And the smell of the blood attracted crows and ravens, and they were going with the blood on their feet onto his fruit trees. And this was upsetting Rav Yosef very much. So Abaya asked in the Gemara, well, surely this is just a gromo, it's an indirect causation, should we really be worried? But the halacha is, he said, get rid of these croakers for me. The actual word in the Gemara is kru-kru, onomatopoeia, these croakers for me. And the halacha was, he had to do everything he could to stop attracting these birds and to stop this bloodletting. And this is brought down in the Shulchan Aruch, Hoshen Mishpat, Siman Kusnan Hei, Lamates, that if there's a nuisance, a neighbor can stop it. And the Ramah writes there, Beruah de l'chol kol nezek vodel, any big danger. However, the Chazon Ish writes, and Baba Batra Yud Gimel Aleph, he says it's not so simple and straightforward. In an apartment building, you have to accept that there may be some disturbance from others. Like if a baby's crying in a neighboring flat, this is the normal manner of living. And therefore, the question is, can a chole, a person who's sick, demand that a window is kept closed? The general view is that if it's hot summer, the window may be opened. And if it's cold winter, the window should be closed. But people should try and reach an understanding with each other and have a compromise. But what about air conditioning? What if people want air conditioning on and others want it off? And this question is addressed by Rav Ozna in the Shevet HaLevi in two different places. In Chelek Tef Siman Reish Ches Tzavi, he says, it is normal when it is hot weather to have it on, and therefore the minority cannot object. But in Chelek Ches Siman Shin Zayin, he says, when there is a sick or elderly person who objects, then you have to listen to them. Well, we asked at the opening about, what about this dilemma of shaking hands? Or what about if the woman offers a hand to shake it and you're in a business setting in your office and you don't want to embarrass her, you don't want to put her to shame, but you don't want to shake her hand? There is a huge difference of opinions about this. At one end of the spectrum is Rav Chaim Kanievsky, who says most definitely not under any circumstances is a man going to shake a woman's hand.
The
non-Jewish
woman doesn't have any
tumor
on her.
I'm just quoting. Well, Moshe Feinstein noted...
What?
What else?
I'm not only talking about her snizzer, I'm talking about sexual arousal. Well, Moshe Feinstein notes that many people do shake hands, though he wasn't too happy about it. But Herschel Schechter quotes a number of his Talmidim who said that in practice Rav Moshe Feinstein was more lenient about the subject when he was asked in person, when you're in a business setting and you don't want to put somebody to shame. Certainly, if you're going to be visiting a top dignitary, like Her Majesty the Queen, what has happened in the past, 5 years ago, some Chabad rabbis visited the Queen with some visit she did to one of their places, and that she was notified beforehand that they would prefer not to shake hands for halakhic reasons, and this was perfectly understood, and everything was done with smiles and with nods and with little bows. And there's a fellow I know called Ziegelman, who's very active in Chizuk of helping disabled people, who was awarded the MBE, and it was being presented to him by Princess Anne, and he notified the palace officials beforehand that he would much prefer not to have to shake hands, and can he just get away with a nod? And they said, yes, that's perfectly acceptable. However, coming to the crunch, there are lenient authorities who quote the Shach in Yeredeah Kuf Tzadi Hei Chof, based on a Rambam, who says that the physical contact is only forbidden when it's a result of chibor, endearment or attraction. And if there is no pleasure from the shaking of the hand, then it's okay. Yeredeah Kuf Ayin Zayin Sif Yud. So, as a result of this, Rav Moshe Feinstein writes in Heaven Ezra Chelet Beis Yudalad that it's okay to sit next to a woman on a train or on a plane. Please know. Even if as a result of sitting next to her, they are touching each other, he said it is allowed. But Chaim Berlin in Nishmas Chaim says it's all right, as it is a regular way of greeting, and he's aware of the implications of refusal, how it could be embarrassing, and how it can give a bad name in a way to the Jewish faith. Rav Chaim Pinchas Scheinberg says, in extenuating circumstances, it is okay to shake hands. Halichas Yisrael, page 282.
People should be publicized as Moshe's Pesach. What goes on in the airline sometimes, it makes such a chill of Hashem.
Not everybody accepts everything that Moshe wrote.
Yeah, okay.
I'm not here.
Is that like the arrangements on the plane, don't travel on the
plane? Yes, so charter your own plane, and then you can make your own rules. But if we, there's a safer...
I was told that the airlines want to get moving, and therefore they upgrade some people into business.
I checked this.
And that's probably why a lot of people...
So I checked this, and they said to me, very clever, they said, we upgrade the woman.
Right, that's the way to do it.
But I've also seen at a graduation where Muslim
Yes.
will not shake hands with the professor
the
vice chancellor, but they hold something under their arm so that the vice chancellor knows it's not
right.
I mean, whether it's the scroll or whatever.
Fine. But those who are forbidding the shaking of hands do so even if the woman is wearing gloves. What I wanted to quote was the Sefer Kedoshim Tiyu. The Sefer Kedoshim Tiyu by Rav Shmuel Katz. He brings a letter from Rav Elimelech Bar Shaul. He writes, Ba'ashkenaz negu ha-charedim of Seis Yad Le'isha. In Germany, it was the practice of Haredi rabbis to give a hand to a woman. Ve'gam rabim ha-rabonim offer those, and many rabbis have followed this practice. Ve'mikam gam ma'ashenegu rabim hesekam. So there is a clearly a head of this. Muvan shelahachter yad, zayosa kama shelahoshet yad. Certainly, it's much easier if you are offered the hand, then it's out of the question. He says, then you take it and you shake it. But that doesn't mean you have to offer it. Yes.
I also heard Rabbi Ginsbury say when he was
Rabbi Ginsbury.
Yeah. You must get the Mechaber Ali Show. I think sat and down before he came home from Pesach to South London and went through Muhammad Lahore. Saying that he could shake hands.
Yeah, Muhammad Lahore.
I think
right.
It's all from memory.
Yeah. Right, so if one does shake, Yeshua will be Yeshua. There's some things which, in talking about modern manners generally, there's some things which are very nice, such as talking Torah, but it's not always in the right place. Rabbi Elimelech Lieberman writes that when your dancing is going on at a chasna, you should not be discussing Gemara with somebody. It's bad manners, it's not the right time, you should be dancing with Samer Chosn Lechala. We once had a whole share about visiting a shiva and the bad manners some people show when they're all the tactical way of speaking when you're a shiva, or the tactless way some people talk at a shiva. Now, I was at a shiva recently where somebody said to the a woman sitting in Avelis to her mother, she said, tell me about your mother. And the woman who was sitting shiva said, no. She said, you tell me about my mother. Yeah. It's your job to cheer me up and tell me about the good things about my mother. There's a story told about the Vilna Gaon when he was 4 years old. His father felt that he was overdoing it a bit when it came to learning Torah. He said, why don't you go out and play with your friends in the playground? You know, you need a bit of fresh air. So when he was 4 years old, he went out to the playground, and 3 minutes later he came back shaking his head. And his father said to him, what's the matter? He said, there's only one toy to play with there, and it's a seesaw. And in order for me to be on top, he has to be pushed down. And I can't do that. The way to become a Vilna Gaon is to be sensitive to others and not to elevate yourself by pushing other people down. There's another interesting story about Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, who was in Shari Tzedek Hospital. His wife had just died minutes beforehand. So he decided to use the stairs instead of the lift in order not to meet people. But on the stairs, he met a Talmud of his. And the Talmud says, Rebbe, my wife's just given birth to a baby girl. And he went, Mazel Tov, wonderful, and he showed excitement. And he said, how much did the baby weigh? Is the mother okay? And didn't say a single word about the fact that his wife had just died a few minutes earlier. And afterwards, this Talmud discovered what has happened, that his wife had died, and he came to the shiva crying. He said, Rebbe, I asked for mechila. And he shook his head. He said, you don't have to ask for mechila. Why should you suffer because of my loss? I'm happy because of your gain. So life is all about having simple manners. Nowadays, the psychologists call it emotional intelligence, social intelligence. You know, how can your host know where to sit you at a wedding if you haven't had the courtesy to send in a reply card to say that you're coming? Have to have manners, and we say modern manners, but it's really a value which is as ancient as Marsha Bereshit, 26 generations before Matan Torah. Don't cause pain to others. You have to minimize it. Do to others as you would like to be done by. And it's not just because of Matan Torah Kamocha. It's because every other person is Tzelem Elokim. Everyone, including Gentiles, is created in the image of God. And that is why Derech Eretz Kavna L'Torah. And that is why the Shabbos before Shavuos is called Shabbos Derech Eretz. Thank you very much. Anyone for a Kaddish?